Today's daf in Masechet Shavuot, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Yir HaKodesh, is daf Mem Hei. Okay, we're in the middle of the Mishnah because this Mishnah essentially took the entire parak, pushed it all together. So we left off where we start something of a new topic. So yesterday we were talking about the relationship to a chenvani. That's your makolet man. And over there we were referring to the question of who is believed. Does he have to take a shvua in the event that he was told to do something, claims that he did it today? It's not really directly related to this at all. We're talking about an argument of who gave the merchandise or the money first. So we're up to, Omar lechenveni tainli bidinar perot v'natanlo. That's about a third of the way down. So Amar Lechenvin, Tenli Bidinar Perot, Vinatano. So he tells Lechenvin, give me a dollar's worth of Perot. The guy gives it to him and says, that'll be $1, please. Tenli Ata Dinar. And the guy says to him, what are you talking about? I gave you the dollar and you put it into the cash register. Natato Be'an Poli. So who is believed there? So this is a Yishava Ba'al HaBayit situation in which if he claims that he already doesn't owe anything, so then he takes the pay raise. Now, we're going to see that this is not so pashut because really we have to get into the question of who is Muchzak, and we'll talk about where precisely these Peros were lying. It turns out in the Gemara that the Peros are in front of the store, and that's really an area which is a Rishus HaRabim, except that it's the place where the Chenveni will put out Perot for people to take, and therefore it's not really fully in the Rishus of the Chenveni, and it's not fully in the Rishus of the individual, because he's not holding these Peros. But if the Peros would actually have been literally in the store, in the Rishus of the Chenveni, or in the hands of the buyer, that would be a standard case of Amotzi Mechavero Alavaraya. And therefore, since over here we don't have a Muchzak, so he swears, when we say he swears, this is not one of the Shvuas that our Mishnah is dedicated to. And those were the Shvuas HaMishnah, otherwise known as the Shvuas of the Chachomim. This is the Shvua that we learned from Reb Nachman, and it's a Shvua Derabonan, which is the Shvuas Hesed. Shvuas Hesed, remember, is a Nishboim and Einon Mishalmim, similar to the Shvuas Deraisa. And here in our Mishnah, we've been talking about the Shvuas of those who are Neutlin. We're just going through what the Dinim are in this case, but this is not an example where the Baal HaBayit swears of where he has to pay, obviously. So, Natan lo et ha-dinar. How about the other way around? He gives the dollar to the storekeeper and says, I'd like to buy a pound of tomatoes, please. And he asks him for the perot. And the guy says, what are you talking about, man? I gave you the perot. This is your paying me for the perot. You took them home. Olach tan l'tol beitcha. Yishava ha-chenvani. So, in that case, where once again, the question exactly is, apparently what happened is he says, okay, you came in here and you took a pound of tomatoes and you said, oh, I'm sorry, I don't have cash. I'll bring the cash later. And now you're bringing me the cash, right? Don't you remember? And the Baal HaBayit says, no, I never took those perot. I first went home for the cash. So that would be the partial way of understanding it, as the Rishonim explain. So in this case, since he isn't made up at all, and that they're still in his, the point is they're munach and b'shus harabim again, so he's not a muhsak, he's not a totally muhsak in his parents. So here he has to swear, but this is considered to be a shvua where we believe him, but it's not included in shvuas hesed. This is a shvuas chachomim, but it's not an ishboim, in this case, vinot. Rabbi Yudaimer, kosha perot biyado, yado al elyona. So basically, Rabbi Yehuda, he's arguing over here on the last case, because he says it's the loikeach that has to be nishba v'noitel, And this is one of those special takonas tefillas, shvuos, because since the peres are in Rosh Hashanah, they're not literally under the hands of the chenvani. So therefore, his yaday is al ha'elyona, as the Rambam puts it. Fine. This is one approach. There is another approach we'll talk about when we get to the Gemara, which Rabbi Yehuda is arguing not on the Reisha, he's arguing on the Seifa. Now, the same thing is true if you do this with a banker or a shulchani, with a person who's going to change your money for you. And you go ahead and you say to the shulchani, I would like change for $100, please. And he gives him and he says, where's your $100? And the guy says, what do you mean? I gave it to you already. You put it in the cash register. So here too, Yishava ba'al habayit, that he gave already the dinner, and he takes his money. But at first he gives him the $100, and now he wants Israeli shkalim for it. And he says, where are the shkalim? So he says, Tinli et ha'ma'ot, and the guy claims that I already gave them to you, and this is your $100 bill that you're paying me for, you put them into your pocket. What's the matter with you? Yishlach lem l'toch kischa. So in this case, Yishava ha'shulchani. So it seems to be the same case in the inverse. And here to Rabbi Yehuda Einar, this is ridiculous. No self-respecting shulchani would ever give money before he takes money. What do you think we're talking about over here, a fool? And therefore, ein derech shulchani liteni sar ad shiitala dinar. He's going to take first the change that the person wanted exchanged. And since that's the case, the Baal HaBayit can be nishba, and the noitel, which means that once again, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, according to the way the Rambam's learning, that this is a case of a shvuas ha-mishnah in which you are noitel after the shvuah. According to Rashi, Rabbi Yehuda is actually being chalek on the reishon. And he holds that once you're made it, that you had given him the mos, so to speak, exchanged these mos, then you probably were mekabel already the dinner, and therefore he would not have to be nishba. That's what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. So if he's arguing on the reisha, he's saying, why would he have to make a shvuah on something which is simply not normal? So according to that, Rabbi Yehuda is arguing on whether we need a shvuah bichlal. Now, remember, we had a discussion last week, and the truth is, you might remember this from our Mishnah, where we talked about it in Ksuvos. So the din over there is that a pogemet getuvata, shem shamru, same way we learned that in Shvu, in the second Ksuvos, a woman admits that she had received already part of her Ksuva, and that now she wants the rest. So as we saw last week, what that means is that the shtar of her ksuva is no longer really a typical shtar that has the keach of the shtar, because the person is made that the amount written in the shtar of the ksuva is not really relevant. You should rely on what I'm saying. Well, it says 1,000, but it's really 700. And how do we know it says 1,000 and it's not really 300? So in this case, as you can see, obviously, that's a pigam in the shtar. And therefore, in order for her to get the remainder, she has to make a shvuah. Lo tipara la bishvuah. Now, there's other cases where that's true. These are cases of someone who is nishba and notel. He has to make a shvuah for what otherwise you'd think would be his by rights. And because of the particular circumstances, we're going to see each one. In this case, the particular circumstances is that she was pogemet. So she actually undermined her ketuvah. So now she has a weakened ketuvah. But there's other cases like this where you have to swear because of the potential harm to another party. So let's say you want to collect, we talked about this case also when we were talking about collecting from a katan and collecting from Hegdesh, remember? And we asked, well, what's the difference? Since the Mishnah later on, which we're now learning, says, that wherever you are collecting based on having a prior lien to something that somebody put out good money for, you have to swear that this debt was not paid up and that you're actually collecting his field legally. So if you're collecting minachasim mishu'ubadim, or you are collecting from yitomim, in the case where, this again is the same case of the Isha, so she's going out to collect from the heirs of her husband, and she wants to get her ksuva from the property of the estate, lo tipara ela bishvua. There's another case where a person would send a get, let's say, to his wife from overseas. So this guy is trapped overseas. He sends a get to his wife so that she can remarry, whatever the case is. But she now goes to sue for the ketuvah. I mean, he's not around to defend himself. So if she is nifrash shelo bifanav, he can't really say to the court, but wait, I have proof that that was paid and so on. On the other hand, I mean, she has a ketuvah that's a valid ketuvah. Her ketuvah is, of course, as we learned, her get itself could serve as the ketuvah if she receives the get from overseas. It obviously wasn't paid. So then she needs to make a shvuah because he's not there. And the same thing is true of yetomim. That yetomim, we're going to be talking, as we're going to see in the Gemara, even yetomim who are collecting from yetomim, they have to also make a shvuah. Now the question is, how can they make a shvuah? They don't really know what's going on, do they? I mean, they inherited this and they are simply collecting what they find in their father's papers. It says over here that this is an IOU or any some type of bond that they have a right to collect. So what would the shvuah be? Well, in that case, the only thing that they could make a shvuah to, they obviously couldn't say, we know that this is not paid up and therefore you have to pay. How could they say that? But what they could make a shvuah is, we swear that we were not told by our father on his deathbed, shelo pikadnu abba, v'lo amar lanu abba, or during his lifetime he ever said, as a matter of course, by the way, this is paid or it's partially paid. Furthermore, they have to swear, shelo matzinu ben shtorotav shel abba, shishtar zeporua, we did not find in his papers any indication that there was a receipt for payment on this particular debt, and that's why we're collecting. Rabbi Yochanan ben Broko Omer, look, it doesn't have to be that extensive. I mean, what if in this case, a child that was born after the death of his father comes now to sue for things that he finds in a hidden safe that they had. Now he opens it up and finds out that somebody owed his father $1,000 and he wants to collect it. Well, he can't say, I never heard from my father. He never met his father. So what would the shvua be in that case, according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broko? Obviously, it would only be that I didn't find a paper that implied that it was paid. I mean, but that's what exactly what Rabbi Yochanan ben Broko is pointing out, that this doesn't require saying all those three things. Even just to swear that you didn't find a paper in that safe, along with that contract, is also something, but it's one of the classic Nishpa'im ve'notlim, where you make the shvuah and you take the Shvu'at HaMishnah, as it's otherwise known. Omer Rav Shimei ben Gamliel, if we have witnesses, im yesh edim, she'amar ha'av b'sha'at mitato, shtar ze eino parua, then hu notel shelo b'shvu'ah. If the father actually said while he was dying that that shtar was never paid, then it is not necessary for the child to make any additional shvu'ah. Now we move on to another takana of the Rabbanan for cases where someone can demand a shvua without having any real basis for a legal case, but he has suspicions. So how can your suspicions make someone else take a shvua? Well, the cases are when someone had unfettered access to your things and was in a position of trust. And now the question is, if you have stopped trusting him, and you know how often this kind of thing happens in cases of accountants or wives or things like that, this is like standard stuff. So let's say you were a partner and you're breaking up, and now everybody suspects everybody of having put their hands in the tiller. So shutafim. Or arisim, where somebody has got access to your field. He's doing all of the farming and he is keeping a certain percentage, let's say 50%, 30%. And he's been taking the money and giving you your part. And you've come to suspect that, he's been taking more than his share. Or how about a wife who was appointed to be the Nosef Venotenet B'toch HaBayit. You gave her to be the one in charge of paying the various bills or running the little grocery store or being the one who makes her fancy cakes and sells them out of her kitchen and so on. And you believe that she's been taking your credit cards, buying all of this stuff and then selling it and using it for her secret trips to Tahiti while you're away on your business, whatever. And a Ben HaBayit. Ben HaBayit would be a case where you've got a number of children that have inherited an estate. They appoint one of the brothers who's the most suitable to be the one to be dealing with the taxes and the lawyers and everything else. And they say that since he had access and we don't know what he was doing, we want him to swear that he didn't take anything that should have gone to us. Omarlo, so if these people who are the ones that are on the receiving end over here of the demand for Shvuah, they say, well, I mean, what are you saying? I mean, you have to have some basis. What exactly do you want me to do? Ma'ata to'anani. And all you need to say is, Ritzoni shetishavali, I just want to make certain that you didn't take anything of mine, so just give me a Shvuah on that. I don't have a specific suit. Even in this case, he would be chayev. But once they split in these cases, and at the time that they split, they basically had accepted the deal of the split as it was without complaint. So then we assume that that is essentially mechila. The person already took it. You took it. You can't turn around now a year later or a day later and say, you know, I thought it over. I'm not sure that I like the accounting. Well, you should have said so. And therefore, in this case, eino yachol hashbio, you can't make him swear. But the grounds for suspicion remain, and the takona is not there. So what happens in cases like that? In the event that you were unable to get somebody to make a shvuah because of a technicality, remember that we still have the Gilgal shvuah. So if for some other reason there was a shvuah that person had to take to you, then you can be megaldo this as an additional shvuah even years later. V'hashvi'it mishametet et hashivu'ah. So this is not obviously referring specifically to our Mishnah, but what it's saying is that, I mean, it's not the cases that we just had have nothing to do with Shemitah, because when somebody is an Oris or somebody's a Shutter, for somebody's an Oisis, for an attendant, B'toch HaBayit, it has nothing to do with Shemitah. Shemitah only affects loans. All that it's saying is that if, let's say, somebody was made of a mitzvah, he was chayav to take a shvuah on the repayment of a loan for which he was made of a mitzvah, and now Shemitah comes along, the same way that Shemitah would have canceled the loan, it also cancels any of the chiyuvei hashvuah on that loan. And that's actually learned from a pasuk, because we learn it from the Zed Dvar HaShemitah. Dvar HaShemitah means this is even on a dibur, meaning on the dibur of a shvuah, that the Shemitah will be meshamet. Fine, this is our entire parak. So now let's go back to the beginning of the Mishnah and to talk about the various diyukim that we have. Again, it's a little bit tough because we remember these small prokim where we do that, we put everything together. It's always, you have to go all the way back, remember the beginning of the Mishnah, and start over again. So that's what we'll do. So the Mishnah begins with a general statement. Kol ha-nishpa'im shebatorah, nishpa'im velo mishalmin. Only the type of shvuah that we're familiar with in the Torah, which is swear and don't pay. You say that that's the only type of shvuah the Torah is ever is mechayev. Do you have a source for that? Minolan? Yes, a very good source. The Amar Kra. V'lakach be'alav, v'lo yishalem. You, the owner that is demanding your thing back from the shomer, you can take in exchange for your thing that shvuah. V'lo yishalem, and the person that you wanted to get the money out of, he doesn't have to pay. So the shvuah takes the place of the payment, which is basically saying the one that would have had to pay is now giving you the shvuah. So, Misha Alav L'Shalem, Lo shavuah, that's the one who swears, which means that you only have a shavuah to avoid payment, not to create a legal responsibility for payment. And then the Mishnah moves on to all of the various cases where we have a new type of shavuah, that's the shavuah's HaMishnah, which was from, that was from before the time of Reb Nachman, that was still in the Zman HaMishnah, where we have these takonas. The first takona was that a worker has a right to be nishba, that he was not paid, and then he can collect. Now, that sounds strange. Why would we give him a right to collect just because he's a worker? I mean, mashna sachir b'takin l'rabbanan, the mishtaba v'shakil. Why would the rabbanan give this person the right to take, without any kind of proof, the money that he claims is due to him? Omer Yehuda Amar Shmuel, well, you need to be very open to learning a great deal from this, because these are halachot gedolot shanukan. There are major, major halachas that are being learned over here in this Mishnah. Wait a minute here. Before you talk, you know, with such fancy language, major, major, what halachas? Halachas usually mean like halacha l'meshem Sinai. Maybe cool the fancy language, you know. These are not halachas. Halachas. Honey, halachas, Ninu. All right, fine. Takanot gedolot shanukan. These are like major takanas of all kinds of Oh, wait a minute. Fancy language again. Major takanas. You mean they're minor takanas? I mean, how exactly do you make up your mind? What's a major takana? What's a minor takana? It's time to watch your mouth. So, gedolas, what are you telling me? That mechlal deika ketanas, so there's some types of takanas that are ketanas. Why should it ever be ketana? I mean, the rabbanon have an insight to make a takana. That's not a dover gadol. I think it's all a dover gadol. So, elam rav nachman amar shmuel. All right. I mean, by the time we finish bashing Shmuel, he's got very little to trumpet over here. Okay. Takanot kvuot shanukan. Basically, all I'm saying is that these are situations for where we would have thought that we need to have like an exact appreciation of what needs to be done based on how the judge sees the situation and the details. No, these are takanot kfuot, that under any circumstances such as these, instead of looking at the particular circumstances, that we made it a standard. That's the point. So these are standards. And what the Rabbanan did with the case of the Sakhir was akru rabbanan lishfu'a mi ba'al habayit v'shadyua asakhir. They took off that chiev where normally if he claims the person who had hired this fellow claims that he was paid, the most that he would have been chayev is midiraisa, is if he had been motive and mitzas, and then he would have had to swear that he didn't owe the other part. But over here, they gave, of course, it's also true that now he doesn't make the Shuas Hesed. But of course, the Mishnah is not discussing Shuas Heseds yet because it hadn't been made. The Takana of Shuas Hesed was made later. But in this case, they took the Chiev, put it onto the Sakhir because he needs this money. This is what he lives off of. Oh, come off it, man. I don't care if somebody needs money. I mean, there's no such thing. There's only what is tzedek u'mishpat. You can't say that this guy needs money, so meila, I mean, that's like a violation of the whole concept of mishpat. What is that supposed to mean, he needs money? No, well, you see, it's true that he needs money, and he's desperate. Because of that desperation, the Balabayit himself wants us to make this type of takana. Why? Nechalei de mishtaba sachir v'shakil. Because he knows that what's going to happen is that in the event that the guy was really right, and he wasn't paid, and he needs that money, oh man, that's all over the internet in no time, right? Look at this guy, I've walked for, oh man, and it's on TikTok. I mean, this is like, who's going to ever go to this guy to get hired, right? So he's very happy that the Rabbanan should be mechayev this guy to make a shvuah. Fine, I'll take the hit. Because if I don't take the hit, then I'm never going to get anybody to work for me again. So, I mean, obviously, if you've got all of the household helpers in the city and they've all got their own little chat, oh man, you treat somebody not right, you don't get any household help. So they're pretty desperate to make sure this doesn't happen. So essentially what the Rabbanan have done is they put something in place. When I say in place, what does that mean? Kavua. That's what Shmuel was trying to say. So they put in place a standard type of response, which would make the whole thing a completely different kind of deal, because then nobody would start putting things up on the internet. And that it, this is the din. The din is that you want your money. All you have to do is go into court and swear that the guy really owes you the money. Okay. So therefore, this is considered to be a takona for a general tzibur, because it's in the general interest, despite the fact that a particular person is, and I know plenty of people like this, be damned if I'm going to worry about being yelled at on the internet. I don't know this person a penny, and how is it that there's lots of people like that, but that's to the general detriment of society. And therefore, it's one of those takanot kivuot, putting something in place, even though it ought to be, you'd think, judged according to the situation. But wait a minute. I mean, don't householders also have internet sites? I mean, what about that WhatsApp group of all the people who have been cheated by their maids, you know? I mean, there's always a WhatsApp group. So don't they also, wouldn't the Sakhir want to have the Balabayit make sure that he can swear, because otherwise he's going to be blacklisted? All he needs to do is refuse or get into trouble with one guy in Hollywood, and he'll be blacklisted and never do another act again in any film in Hollywood. So isn't it kedai for him that it should be the other way around? Let Harvey Weinstein swear that he paid him, you know? Why should he be the one who's going to be blacklisted?
Rebbe's uncle was blacklisted in Shanghai from all the felt dealers, and that's before the internet.
That's
Don't
true.
Trump to Weinberg,
That's
right?
true. That's true. Deligre balabayit. So he wants to get a job, doesn't he? Yeah, come on. I mean, a balabayit is desperate for household help, you know. He's going to have to hire him. And I understand that. And people are not desperate for jobs. I mean, it only goes in one direction. This logic, I don't understand. The balabayit. I mean, this guy, you think he loves working and cleaning your toilets? I mean, the reason that he's working is because he needs the job. So what do you tell me? Yeah, we're not going to get any household help. Believe me, you'll pay him enough, you'll get household help. So why are we looking at it from only one point of view? So there's got to be another explanation of why it's fair and understandable as well that these things should be meaningful to us. Ella. The truth is, a Baal HaBayit is generally busy. So he's got a lot of people that he's responsible to take care of. He's got the gardener, and he's got the grocery man, he's got the delivery boy, and he's got the flower person, and so on and so forth. Besides all of the people that are working in the kitchen, and this is only made lechatchila for South Africa, obviously. Besides the people working in the kitchen and cleaning the rest of the house, right? So every Friday, let's say he goes and he pays everybody. And okay, so he's been handing out money like all morning. And it's very possible that he thinks that that person was in the group also, because he had prepared money for everyone, and he can easily get confused. So the Baal HaBayit is Tolud before Alavu, and therefore it makes sense that the person who desperately needs the money knows very clearly whether he was paid or not. Whereas to the Baal HaBayit, it's like one of a bunch of different responsibilities he's got. So they switched the Shvuah to the Sakhir. So then, I mean, if that's the case, why don't we just believe him? Why do we have him make a Shvuah if we assume that it's possible that, or it's actually very likely that he forgot? So we should have just accepted what he says and give it to him without a Shvuah. No, because the truth is, we want to be mefis daita shel ba'al habayit. It's true that it's very mistaber that the one who made a mistake is the person who was the employer. But we don't want him to go walk out of this believing that he was cheated. Because, I mean, if there's no price to be paid for the claim that you put against him, you feel pretty bad if the guy claims and is believed in court just because he claims. So to be massive, this is what we do. This way, the relationships between the employer and the employee are meant to be balanced in a way that we continue to have people satisfied to do the work, people getting the people that need to do the work, and the relationships are not embittered by these types of interactions. So the taking into consideration of the entire focus of society are called takanot kvuot, putting particular modalities into place in order that certain types of interactions should proceed smoothly. And that's part of the takanos of Bezdin, and that's what Shmuel is pointing out. Takanot kvuot are sometimes perceived by the person who is the one that suffers from them as being unfair. But since they are kvuot, ultimately it evens out and it makes the most sense for society as a whole. That was the point that Shmuel was trying to make. He wasn't talking hyperbole. He was actually referring to a type of takana. V'leisev lebe eidim. What you've done is you've created a need to make a shvua. And we spoke about last week, or the week before, about how terrible it is to make a shvua. And the whole earth was trembling when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said the Yisr of a shvua. I mean, why would the Rabbanan use that as a way to make a takon? I mean, there are ways to assure that things proceed smoothly. For instance, let's make a takon that you can never pay a worker unless it's in front of witnesses. That way you avoid all of these situations. You're worried about breakdowns in these relationships. Great. There's a way to make sure that there's no breakdowns. You cannot pay unless you have witnesses. You want to pay without witnesses, then fine. So then be open to the fact that you'll have to pay again as many times as the guy says you have to pay him. That's a reasonable thing to do. And that way an employer knows up front, do I want to go for a witness? Well, I trust the guy. But he knows deep down he's taking a chance. So then it's going to be fair that the guy will be able to take it, no? And why don't we make such a takana? No, because a takana has to be practical. I mean, for heaven's sakes, to find witnesses every time you pay up somebody. I mean, the guy's in your house. You have the money right now. You're going out to work. You're going to be able to bring people back to life. That's crazy. It's simply not practical. Trichale milsa. Okay, fine. So I understand that. How about making a takana that you should pay workers up front? So that way, if the guy worked for you, he obviously had been paid. And then there would be no arguments about it. So lezev lemikor. And then if the worker wants to pay, wants to work without getting paid, so then he realizes that he trusts this person implicitly, or he may get cheated. But I mean, there can't be any tainas under those circumstances. Yeah, but we make takonas that are necha to people. Here, both the employer and the employee would much rather be working the other way around. But the payment comes in other words, the work comes as on a credit basis that I'm going to pay you at the end, because the worker certainly doesn't want money on his person while he's working, because he knows perfectly well what's going to happen. He's going to go home having smoked it all away and with drinking it all away. And then when wifey hears that he smoked and drank everything that he worked, he's finished. So he'd rather have the money at the end of the day when the pubs are closed, you know, and the employer would rather be able to come home after getting money out of the bank, instead of having to know that the day before he had it already for 5 o'clock in the morning. Oh, heck, I forgot. Oh, the bank is closed. How am I going to hire anybody? Again, it's just not practical in terms of what people would prefer. So to make a takana for people, the takana has to be something that is practical and would also be most people's preference. Now, the question is, okay, I understand that, but if that's true, you're telling me that he might have simply forgotten that he never paid this guy. He thought that it was part of all the people that came in. So then why would he not be believed, even if the argument between the employer and the employee was about the agreed wages? So should be the same thing. I mean, look, you got a bunch of people working in the house. You don't remember who you're paying $5 an hour to and who you're paying $6 an hour to. If he says that we agreed on $6 an hour, why don't we believe him about that also? Let him make a shvua that it was $6 an hour and be paid accordingly. But the din is not like that because Alma Tanya, take a look at the Braita. Braita says it's clearly not like that. You bring in your something to repair, right? So you're not going to pay an oman to repair your washing machine. So he says, he's the washing machine repairman. So he says, you agreed to pay $2 for this job. And the other guy says, no, I agreed to pay you one. So then it's a case of a motzi mechaver olam haraya. Why is it a case of a motzi mechaver olam haraya? Why isn't it a case of a socher that is believed because he's more aware of what's happening? No. To say the question of whether you might have forgotten whether this guy was there when you were giving out the money, that is understandable. But people do not forget a ketzitza. When you're arguing out with a guy how much you agreed to pay, that's not something that a person is going to forget because he's the employer. That makes no sense. So okay, but still, why, if the issue over here is that the employer might have gotten confused, then why is it limited, this shvua, why is it limited only to the same day that the payment was made? Why can't the guy come the next day? So nami. Why can't he come later and say, listen, you didn't pay me? And yet, it says beferish that it does not apply. Halama Tanya, once the time is over, avarzmano velonatano, and now he's coming to claim, I never got paid, hareze eino nishba benoto. Then, it's a standard tviya, and whatever the din is, whether if it's a made of a mikzas or if it's a shvuas hesed, why is that? Well, because we also remember we have a chazaka that a baal habayit is not going to be over on an Isser D'oraisa. I mean, that he's very worried about. I mean, what I'm not going to pay him up during the course of the day. There, it's very reasonable that since he was careful, he would have definitely paid it by the end of the day. So the Chachamim, in that case, accepted that chazaka. I'm so confused. Didn't you say that he thinks he paid it? So I don't get it. If he thinks he paid it, so he doesn't realize. Isn't that the whole point? He doesn't realize he's doing something wrong. And therefore, what's the difference? He got confused. He got confused today. He got confused for the rest of the week, too. I mean, what does that mean? Yes, but there is such a thing as a recapitulation in your mind of going over clearly what you did. So, how do you mean to if you're talking about during that day, the person is working on his own cognizance, so to speak. He's paying his workers, like anybody in the world pays his workers. This is an amazing insight. But at the end of the day, he's no longer working on his own cognizance. He is now working for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? So he's coming in the evening and he's going over, okay, what did I do today? These are the kind of people that we're supposed to be, right? So what did I do today? So I know that I had a chiyuv to pay my workers. Was I yotzei my chiyuv? So at the end of the day, when it may be that he's about to be over on an Isser D'oraisa, he says, I don't, did I actually pay every one of them? So he looks over his papers and sees, you know what? Maybe I didn't pay him. So then we no longer, if he says, no, I thought it over that evening and I already made sure that I paid you. Then he would be rameh anafshe. He would basically force himself to concentrate on exactly what happened and he would remember. Umitka. I don't understand. You're saying it's a chazaka that the employer is honest. It's not a chazaka that the employee is honest. I mean, it's the same thing. What, an employee is going to be over on Lo Tigzo? He's going to be willing to take money that isn't due him by pretending that he wasn't paid? I mean, it's just as much a chazaka that the, why is it, you know, it sounds like one of these very subtle prejudices that we're talking about. You know, the guy who's got the money, he's the honest guy. And the worker, no, he's not honest. Well, what kind of crazy thing is that? If the employer is honest, then the employee is honest in terms of what the din has to assume. That's a crazy chazaka. True. But by the balabayit, we have two different chazakas. One is that a balabayit is not going to be over on Baal Talim, but there's another chazaka which you forget about. And that is the guy's coming the next day. He always gets paid on Friday, and he's coming on Sunday. You didn't pay me. What do you mean you didn't pay? Now you're coming to tell me you didn't pay me. Why didn't you come on Friday to tell me you didn't pay me? What, you're going to just stop? What, you're too lazy to come and get your money? The chazaka is that a person who is waiting for a salary does not just wait around for a few days to collect a salary. So that's also a chazaka. That is, ein sachir mashher secharo. It's not normal for a person who's been working for a weekly salary or a day, whatever it is, to just walk away and not take his money. So because of that, we believe once it's past the time, we believe the employer, because we now have two chazakas. Omer of Nachman HaMashmuel, this is all very nice. I just want you to be clear about one thing. You're talking about it as if this is like a standard situation. But remember, if you can also throw a migu into the situation, that changes everything. So the Mishnah is all based on the assumption that it's an established fact that this guy was working for this other person. If we don't even know objectively that there was a relationship of an employer-employee relationship, so then the guy could say, who are you? You mean I've been working for you all week? Never saw you before in my life. What are you talking about? Never saw you before. So in that case, he would be without any legal basis for a claim at all. So it's got to be that we've established objectively, we have witnesses that know that there is an employee-employer relationship. But in the event that the person says, yes, you did work for me, and I paid you, and he could have said, I never saw you before, so then you have to throw that into the pot over here, because he has an ego in which he could have simply walked away and said, I never saw this guy before in my life, or just please get him out of here. So in that case, therefore, said Shmuel, only if we have witnesses that he was a hired hand. But suppose he had hired him without any witnesses. Since he could have said to him, I didn't pay you. I never saw you before. When did I ever hire you? And that he certainly would have been accepted as a taina, because we're not, I mean, we don't have any kind of shvua that a person can claim that he was hired. Therefore, in this case, he would have a migo. And since he could have said that, he has that koach of that migo. And he could say, yes, it's true, I did hire you, but I've already paid you. So it's sort of like, if we believe him that he hired him, we should believe him that he paid him. Omar Le'Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak said to him, to Rabbi Nachman, excellent, excellent, well done, yasher. Rabbi Yochanan said the same thing that you said. And once again, we had this also last week. If you say Rabbi Yochanan, does that mean that Rish Lakish was arguing? Because usually you would have quoted both Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. So does this mean that Rish Lakish had disagreed? No. Not necessarily. Some say not necessarily, because it's possible Rish Lakish was having some coffee at the time that Rabbi Yochanan was saying over this. Rabbi Yitzchak was there. Rish Lakish, maybe according to this approach, would generally not tolerate an opinion that he did not agree with. But if he's drinking coffee, then he would tolerate it. Now, Rabbi Yitzchak walked out before Resh Lakish finished his coffee, you see. So he never saw the explosive reaction of Resh Lakish to this. He had no idea whether Resh Lakish agreed or didn't agree. That's what some say. The Ikeni Amri, others say that actually Resh Lakish treated Rabbi Yochanan with a lot of derech eretz. And Resh Lakish would always wait until Rabbi Yochanan was completely finished the shir before he would interrupt. So Misha Avishayle, Vishasikle, he used to wait for the end of the shir, and therefore he was still quiet at the time that Rabbi Yitzchak left. So Rabbi Yitzchak didn't quote Resh Lakish because he didn't know one way or the other. Itmar Nami, we find also that Rabbi Nasha Bar Zvid said in the name of Rav, the same halacha that we just quoted from Shmuel, that in the case where there's a migo, that then we would believe the employer. That lo shano ela shesecharo beedim, same exact din. Ava zecharo shelo beedim, if you initially had hired him, and he doesn't have any witnesses to that, it's only you who said that. Yes, it's true. So let me talk to you. Yocholo marlo lo secharticha meolam. Yocholo marlo secharticha venatati lechascharcha. Just like you have the migo of saying, I never, ever hired you to work for me. You can also say, yes, it's true. I did hire you, but I paid you. Omar Rami Bar Choma. Ah, I love it when a plan comes together. Exactly what I always thought. That's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Kama Malya Hashmaitta. The Mishnah was very misleading. It made it sound like in every case, certainly we have to put in this stipulation that we knew that they were hired. Now, every time that that happens, Rava gets upset. Oh, it's brilliant. You're the one who's going to say it's brilliant, right? What makes it brilliant? My Mal Yosef. Actually, it's wrong. It's not brilliant. Because Im Kane, if this is true, that if you've got a Migo saying that you never hired me at all, so then he's also going to be Neman without a Shvua, I ask you a very simple question. How do you ever find a case in the Torah that you've got a Shvuat HaShomrim? Okay, the Torah says, you come to a guy, you say, I gave you this thing to watch, and the guy says, well, it was stolen, he has to take a shvua, whatever, Shomer Chinam, Shomer Sachar, there's never a reason why he would have to take a shvua, because he could always say, I know what you're talking about, never happened. And therefore, since he could say, you never gave me your lawnmower, so he could also claim and be believed without taking a shvuah that something happened by an onus. It was stolen, depending on the case, shomer chinam, shomer sachar. So where would he have to swear? I don't understand what you're saying, says Rami Bar Choma. What do you mean, where would he have to swear? He'd have to swear where there was a witness, of course. I mean, that's the whole point I'm making. What kind of weird question is that? I knew you'd say that. But look, the guy could also have said, couldn't he? I gave it back to you. So since he could have said, I gave it back to you, now how are you going to prove I didn't give it back to you? Tell me, how are you going to prove that? You're going to have witnesses there the whole time, but he didn't give it back? So, mitoshe cholomar lo hechazarti v'lecha, he doesn't have a chiev to give it back to you in front of witnesses, does he? So since he would have been neman to say, I gave it back to you, why isn't he neman to say, it was stolen, or it was nenas, depending on what the case would be. So Yochaloma Nensu, without having to take a shvuah, is always going to have a migo. And you're claiming that, well, obviously we're only talking about cases without migo. Says Rami Bar Choma, no, it's a simple case. He had the guy sign on a contract. It's very standard, isn't it? I mean, I'm giving you something. I just take your signature that you're holding for me. This thing, it's expensive thing. So we write it up. So if kibay bishtara. So now, since I can prove I still have that shtar that I gave you my lawnmower and you're claiming it was stolen, you can't say you gave it back to me because then how do I have the shtar? You would have taken the shtar from me. So because of that, you don't have a proof. You don't have a proof from the fact that there is a case in the Torah where you take a shvua because you don't have an ego. So wait a second. Before we go on, says the Gemara, it seems from the base of this discussion that there's an issue that both Rami Bar Choma and Rava agree about, and that that's why they're having this discussion. I was never sure about what the din was in that case. Apparently, they both hold that in the event that I made you take something with Aiden that are there, or with the star that is there, right? That we're assuming that that does not mean that you have to return it with Aiden. I mean, because if it meant you'd have to return it with Aiden, then this whole discussion is ridiculous. Once Rami Bar Choma said, well, the case would be that you have witnesses that you were mafkid in. So then you wouldn't have been able to say, well, Robert wouldn't have been able to say to him, well, after all, he might have given it back. You couldn't give it back unless there were Aiden. So what's the problem? And that would be something that Rami Bar Choma and Rava would have had to agree on. But if they're not fighting over that, they're both ready to proceed with this as a problem. What am I going to do? So apparently they both agree that even though you gave it to him, they ate him, you're still going to have to address the question of, can't he say he gave it back? And you're not going to say, well, if he got it with Adam, he must have given it back with Adam. You can't say that. And that means, Ein tzarich lachzir lo be'edim. And then when they turn to the solution, what's the big solution? A shtar. Ah, so apparently if you did take something with a shtar, then you would have to prove that it was given back. And therefore, as long as this guy's got the shtar, if you don't have witnesses, that shtar is going to be binding. Okay, fine. That's true. Now, I'm about to show you how Rami Bar Choma thought that Reb Sheshes is a genius. Because Rami Bar Choma was Kori Alei de Reb Sheshes, Yosem David et Advarim Ha'ela Bilvavo. So what happened was, apparently Reb Sheshes, instead of walking away from this discussion, he kept it in mind whether he's going to be able to really find a basis for the question of who is actually going to believe if there is a Migo, because he found this incredible story. He meets up, Reb Sheshes meets up with Rabba Bar Shmuel, and he says to him, do you have any chiddushim, maybe a brisa that you heard that I don't know about, that has to do with this sugya, about a sochir that the Chachomim gave the right to be nishba? He says, yes, matter of fact, says Rabbi Bar Shmuel to him, I do have a brisa that I learned that made a big impression on me. You know, the brisa said that a sochir bismano nishba venotel, ketzad, bisman sha'amarlo sechartani velo natata lischari, but it's only a case where he says to the employer, you hired me and didn't pay me. And the employer says, I hired you, and I did employ you. I did pay you. But suppose they're arguing about shtayim katzatzteli, and the other one says, lo katzatzteli ela achat, and the question is about how much I agreed to pay you, then how much of a chaver of a right? Now, so Reb Shalki, so you and I would have heard this price and would have said, yeah, okay, fine. We learned that already before, like 15 minutes ago. We just had that sugya. Thank you very much. Anything else new? But Reb Sheshes took every word to heart. So Reb Sheshes says to himself, oh, well, wait a minute. The Sefer starts talking about a raya, right? A motzi mechavero olav haraya. So then that means that the Reisha was talking about without a raya. Isn't that what, that's what it's saying? If you suddenly introduce the idea, Amotzi mechavero olav haraya, Mashenken, until now, we don't need any raya. Oh, aha. Well, wasn't that the whole question? Do you need a raya? Do you need Edom or not? So apparently the Reisha was talking about without a raya. So I don't have to come into court with Adam to say that we do have an employer-employee relationship, which proves that what both Rav and Shmuel said, that if you have amigo by claiming theoretical Meagle, you could have claimed that I never saw you before and I never hired you, that the Mishnah wouldn't apply. No, that doesn't prove that. Omer Rav Nachum bar Yitzchak, there's a tremendous difference in the raya, for heaven's sakes. Resha v'Seifa, they're both talking about a raya, but why would the Mishnah mention the raya about the circumstances? The Mishnah is only talking about a raya to the money that's owed you. That's what we talk about. Don't you understand? That's what a motz mechaveru of raya means. You want to take cash from somebody, so then you need to show with witnesses that the cash is owed you. That's the normal use of the word raya. To mention that there's a raya about the whole situation, about whether you were hired, that's not a raya to the money. That's just a raya to make sure that the employer shouldn't have a migu. The Mishnah is never going to mention that, for heaven's sakes. How can you compare the raya in the Seifa to the raya in the Reisha? Okay, lovely, brilliant ways of noting the delicacy with which Chazal are omed on exactly what would be the best type of putting interrelationships into place for maintaining the type of relationships that are very delicately balanced always in society. As we know, these are things where people really run into trouble and there are difficulties in the labor market. Those kind of difficulties, in order to avoid that, were put into place. Another very important limud that we had agav today was the importance of avoiding hyperbole that isn't really meduyak. If you're trying to say something about a halacha, so we see how makbid we were in understanding what was Shmuel trying to say. But Shmuel's going to say halachas gedolas. What does that even mean? Takonas gedolas. What does that even mean? So in understanding his lashon, we understand that it's not, there's no stam shtuyot. He was actually making a very chashuvah point. Okay, Rabosai, that concludes our daf. Now we have a Shmuel Chanina who is not on a bus for a change because they've managed to cancel his bus. How do you like that? It's better to have a flight canceled than landing up in Cyprus somewhere. So you should actually bless your mazel that you don't go on these ridiculous trips and those cigar holders with the rocket in the back. Oh my gosh, you got to be nuts. But in avoiding that, you avoid landing up in Cyprus.
Perek Yud Mishnah Hey.
All right, let me get that into the recording.
While Rebbe switches to a new recording,
yes,
the issue of that he was keeping in his heart, and we find other times by Chazal Hadar Amar, that taking the time to consideration is very fascinating. Right, that Chazal would think things over and weighing, and the analysis continued in the background.
Yes, it's also on the same daf where we learned that the Derech of an Adam is to take things to heart at the end of the day and make sure that things have been done properly. That's also big yisod in the Mesilas Yesharim as well, right?